Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome back to another episode of the Ricky Anderson the Podcast, the greatest of all podcasts, GUAP. I'm your host, Alex Espinoza, with my co-host, Dr. Hot Dog, Hal Gordon.
Hey, Hot Dog.
Give me an A. And for this week's episode, we made it all the way to episode 60, and we have the admin of MLB Cathedrals on Twitter. His name is Mark Anderson. Make sure to give him a follow there. He's got over 120,000 followers. We talked to him about his March Madness bracket he has for worst MLB stadiums. We had a great talk just about A's history, their stadiums throughout the years, and just his thoughts on the current state of ballparks. And yeah, it was a fun chat. But first, we got to preview Hal. Hal's got some news for Saturday. Yeah.
So since the Saturday is Oakland Roots home opener, I'm gonna post a discount link for tickets. There's not too many tickets left. So if you want to come, go
it's
get
on
your
Saturday,
tickets now.
Right?
Even if you don't have the discount link, it's 7 o'clock on Saturday at Laney, which is right by Lake Merritt BART station. So it's super convenient. There aren't a ton of tickets left, but even if you don't have the discount card, I think it's like a $25 ticket. But go get them.
Go support your roots. Yeah.
Go support your roots. And I think halftime in the past, they've done a hot dog toss at halftime, just chucking hot dogs into the stands. So they asked if I wanted to do that. So you'll see me out there.
I'm getting my arm loose. Hot dog chucking arm.
It's like Michael Jordan coming out of retirement, dude.
That's right.
This is like
everyone loved when he played for the Wizards. That was a great idea. There's no mistakes there. Yeah, but come on out. And but otherwise we have this, I think, great conversation with Mark Anderson from MLB Cathedrals. So first of all, you're going to want to get on Twitter and vote for the Oakland Coliseum to be the all-time worst stadium / best most beloved worst stadium. But stick around for this conversation. It's a little bit strange because we got him on and he immediately started, before we could introduce it, he immediately started asking us questions about stuff.
You want to know about how, man? It was great.
So we wanted to include a little bit about that. So that's why we're recording this intro beforehand. The interview starts strange. We hit the ground running.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram and YouTube at Ricky Blog. But yeah, enjoy this episode. We're just going to jump right into it.
Hot dog.
Okay, sweet. All right, thanks a lot, Mark.
Wait, back up. I want to ask a question, serious question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you have that Apple Watch or a Fitbit?
I have my phone. So you're asking how many steps I take?
Yeah. How much do you get through a day?
At one point, I think in 2019, have you ever been in Men's Health?
Yeah.
They asked me this in my Men's Health interview. There's this article. This is funny. There's this article of everyday strength, just like dudes doing. This guy's holding a thing of cement, just like dudes who do hard work. And so some guy reached out to me on Twitter. He's like, "Hey, I'm a freelance journalist. I just got this weird." I got this weird assignment that I'm supposed to interview a stadium vendor, and you're the only one I could find on Twitter. So here I am here. And the number here, it was 8,340. Estimated number of steps Gordon takes in a regular game day shift at the Oakland Coliseum.
Okay, but I mean, that's just half of it, though, right? Because how many stories? Does it keep track of how many stories you go up and down?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the thing is you don't want to be an asshole and block the stadium's thing. So you got like 60 pounds around your knee, around your right. thing. You gotta go down.
Yeah.
And then you got to think, please don't make me a cripple by the time I'm 50.
Right. So that's a lunge.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a workout. Right? It's a workout. Yeah.
It's 100 lunges a game.
Yeah, so it's a winter lunge.
I mean, you're probably going upstairs like, I don't know, 100 stairs, more than that. Not yeah. just stairs individually, but floors. Yeah, that's a good workout.
It was a good workout. I last year, because they missed missed a week because of the lockout. They had a doubleheader. And I just remember, you know, I got there real early for the first game. Then there was a break in the middle, and it was like a day-night doubleheader, so they cleared out everybody. So I had nothing to do for an hour. So like, I went out to the parking lot and drank a beer or two with people tailgating. Got back in there, and I never like drink energy drinks or anything, but I'm like, there was like an energy drink in the big walk-in fridge. I was like, all right, let me do this energy drink to give me some energy. And by the third inning of the second game, I was like, let's play four games today. And then by the eighth inning of the second game, I was like, I'm in so much pain.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah.
I'm glad you're still alive, Hal.
So, one last question to Hal. Sorry, Alex.
No. Yeah.
All right. So, I remember,
we should do this on the pod. We should like record this on the pod.
Yeah, this is great, man. Yeah. We just have a discussion. It doesn't have to be, you know, you guys are cool. How long have you been doing it?
Since 2005.
Okay, so wow. Okay, wow. Okay. You don't look old enough to be able to have done
here, it. I'll bring you another. I'll bring you another picture. This is from New Comiskey Park. So.
That's right.
Here we go. How many stadiums have you vended at? Like four?
I've done New Comiskey Park, Wrigley Field, Nats Park, Camden, the Giants, and the A's. This is from my rookie season. This is my dad and I at game two of the 2005 World Series. There you go. It's kind of glared. There it is.
That's cool. You were the newest.
That's my rookie year.
I've never seen a World Series game, man. That's like the one thing I've never seen. Yeah.
Me neither.
Yeah. That's sweet. All right.
So, I mean, you plan on doing this till you can't lift 60 pounds anymore?
I just graduated from my PhD program at Berkeley. So I'm looking for
congratulations.
Thanks. I'm looking for a real job. And so, you know, I always tell myself during every big, life transition, all right, that's enough. I've done my vending. I'm moving on. And then I always get yanked back into it. So we'll see. You never know. I may be done by now, but.
Could you do it part-time? Like, go in and just, hey, can I do a 20 game package?
Maybe. Like we'll see. The thing that I've done, and listeners, if we end up including this, well, no. So the thing that I am at the Oakland Coliseum, I do this whole thing with a big vest. Here, I'll show you my card here. My card there.
He's got Tops cards. He's got cards from Tops.
I got the big thing with the big red and white vest, and I have all this condiments and stuff. And to do that, I have to get to the stadium just so early. You know, I'm getting to the Coliseum at like 4 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game and stuff. And I think with a real job and maybe eventually with a family, that begins, you know, I'd have to maybe find a smaller vending role, a less intense vending role. Be vendor emeritus.
Now, the reason I'm asking is because, you know, when I grew up, you know, my dad had like a 20 game package or season tickets with somebody. And, you know, for 20 years, you know, we'd go to games together. And I remember the same vendor from the first game that I was there till the, you know, the last time I was there, he was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy, you know, people get old and they die, and he, you know, it was his time. And man, that guy had more recognition and a bigger funeral than anybody I've ever met.
It's fun to be, you know, being a vendor is fun because you get to be part of people's memories, right?
Right.
The best compliment I've ever gotten was from a dad who was like, you know, hey, we came 2 weeks ago, and the only thing the five-year-old wanted to talk about on the way home was a hot dog vendor, right? greatest compliment of my life. Absolutely, greatest compliment of my life. I'll never top that. And I mean, that's what's fun about it is it's not just like a retail job, or it's not just a job where you're walking around selling. You're like part of people's memories. You're part of people's family experiences.
Yeah. The experience. Yeah. I mean, just imagine if you had cotton candy, how many great memories you did for kids.
Oh, hey, I have a cotton candy machine. I inherited it from a vendor. And every Halloween, I live in San Francisco, like down, you know, in a dense neighborhood. So every Halloween, we just set the cotton candy machine out on the street and just spin cotton candy. Amazing. Well, I'm sure some of this has made it into the podcast.
This is all going on the pod.
I'm Hal Gordon. I'm sure we've added an intro before this, but if not, I'm Hal the Hot Dog Guy. This is Alex Espinosa, and this is Mark Anderson from MLB.
Yeah,
Mark Anderson, the creator of MLB Cathedrals on Twitter. I'm sure. Are you on Instagram as well?
Yeah, I mean, I just started that up.
But mostly on Twitter, MLB Cathedrals, and we had to have him on just to talk about. I mean, talk about some MLB Cathedrals, right? But also,
no more cathedral than the Coliseum, baby.
He's running a March Madness bracket. He's running a March Madness bracket about the worst ballpark, and of course the Oakland Coliseum made it into the bracket.
They're into the second round, baby.
we're into the second round. Awesome. Yeah. So Mark, could you introduce yourself? Tell us about like why you love old stadiums. Where are you from? Yeah.
Okay, that's a great question. I've always been a history nerd.
Yeah.
I've always been a photography nerd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've always been an architecture nerd, and always I've been a big, huge baseball nerd. So what combines all those things more than the history of ballparks and stadiums? And so, you know, at a young age, I'm going to date myself, but we didn't have the internet when I was a kid. We had the like encyclopedia, World's Encyclopedia. And
Mechanica.
Looking at, you know, and I just became fascinated. I grew up in the Kingdom, which was, you know, I hope it wins this thing. It's going to be probably in the Final Four of worst ballparks. But
the Kingdom.
You know, every time I saw when the Mariners would go visit Comiskey Park or Tiger Stadium, or, you know, saw a game at Wrigley Field, you know, Wrigley, I was just blown away. Like that those are places that exist. Yeah. And you know, just doing my research and just fell in love with it and just became really knowledgeable on the subject for no reason, good reason, just a passion for it. And so one day I decided, you know what, I'm going to share some of my knowledge on Twitter, thinking I'd find other, like maybe 500 other fellow baseball nerds.
It's huge now. That account's huge, man.
Yeah, like 120,000, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love it. You know, and I've learned things along the way, I mean, there's a lot of ballpark history and baseball history, and just the way everything's evolved is pretty fun.
So you've been to, you grew up in Seattle area. You grew up in Seattle.
Correct.
going to the Kingdome. How many baseball stadiums have you been to?
I should know the exact number, right? It's about 23-ish, 24.
23. Yeah. Yep.
Go on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Do you want to hear the most pathetic part of this whole deal? Is
yeah.
You know, I've been to pretty much, you know, growing up on the West Coast.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than the East Coast. I mean, you can spend all day and still be in California.
Yes.
Where on the East Coast, you know, you're going through like 10 different states. So
yes.
And ballpark wise, you know, if you're in Baltimore, you could be in Philadelphia, New York. That's yep. I mean, even yeah, you know, Boston, all like 10 Boston, all these other places within hours.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you're in Seattle or Oakland, you're not driving to another ballpark for a day trip for sure. So you know, that's a slow. So anybody who's on the West Coast has a disadvantage as far as seeing
yeah, absolutely. You
know, all the stadiums and the ballpark. So I live on the East Coast now, but I still haven't made it up to the north, the very Northeast. So I haven't been to Fenway yet. I'm ashamed to admit that.
Well, Mark, you're in Savannah, right? Have you been to the Savannah Bananas games? What are those
love
like?
It. Yeah. Yeah,
they're going on a barnstorming tour this summer too. It should be cool. They're coming to San Jose. Yeah,
so. Right. I mean, it's huge because the story behind that is Savannah had the Sand Nats, right?
Yeah.
They were a single A, I believe, affiliate of the New York Mets, and the stadium that the Bananas and the Sand Nats played at, Grayson Stadium, it was built in the 20s. It's in a neighborhood that's not as cool as it would be if it was downtown, even though it's fine.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, 9 years freaking, almost 100 years old. So the Sand Nats wanted a new place to play. And just even if you can believe this now, a single A ballpark is still like $80 or $90 million. Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Savannah said, no. And so they moved to Africa, somewhere in North Carolina, right? So the team, the Savannah Bananas, they're not even affiliated with any major league team. They're just a summer college all-star team, basically. And the Sand Nats can draw anybody, right?
Yeah.
You can't get a Bananas ticket.
Yeah, I heard.
Because Jesse Cole, the owner, has figured it out. It's all about entertainment.
The A's got to take it. The A's got to take a lesson from them.
The A's really do, man. Experience.
Yeah.
I mean, if any place that I've ever ballpark I've been to is lively, I don't think there's a more lively, crazy crowd than I've seen than in Oakland.
Yeah. You know, so tell us about your experience going to the Oakland Coliseum.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my first experience was there. I'm going to date myself again. Buddy and I had a summer college class that we had to take to get out of school earlier. So I had to take college class during the summer. And one of my best buddies is also in the class, and teacher shows up and says, hey, look, you know, I can't teach this class. And we're like, no, you're going to teach this class because we need this class to get to the next class so we can graduate. And so long story short, the TA said, I'll teach the class, but I had this trip planned. See you guys in 10 days. So my buddy and I looked at each other and we said, road trip. So we ended up coming down to San Francisco, Oakland, and during college. And so this is before the monster was built, Mount Davis.
Yeah, Mount Davis. Yeah, I ruined it, man. Yeah.
Right. So that was my first experience at Oakland. So I actually got to go to a game there before that monstrosity was built. And we'll talk about that a little more later, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But so yeah, that was my first experience. Loved it, and that was my second ballpark, too. So me growing up in the Kingdome, you can imagine. To me, the Oakland Coliseum was like, I don't know, Disney World to a kid.
It was like sunny out. You can see the open hills, the blue sky. You can
see the beautiful Oakland hills, grass. It was fantastic. So,
Whenever I think of the Kingdom, I just think of Mark McGwire hitting like the back wall.
There's a second deck. I was actually at that game.
You were there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge shot. Yeah. You can't even, the TV doesn't even show you how far away that was.
And then when they show him on, you see that video, he's like definitely on steroids at that point. He is huge. Sure. He is huge.
Yeah. So,
but Mark, I'd also, I really want to take it all the way back. To Philly with the A's. I would love to kind of go through the different ballparks that the A's have played through throughout their whole franchise.
Sure. We can go back to a little more history than that. Most of your ballparks built up into, you know, the early 1900s are all made of wood.
Yep.
Right. People back then smoked a little bit more than they do now.
And they burned down.
Cigar. They all, like, the percentage of ballparks that burn down is crazy. It's like
just because people smoking, that's great.
Or whatever. I don't know how they are. That's just how I presume they caught fire. Yeah. But they all burn down, right? Mm. And so they just go in and build another one of wood. The Philadelphia Phillies were the first one that actually built the Baker Bowl in the 1800s, but in 1895 they upgraded it. It was the first they actually used brick and some steel in there, right? Mm-hmm. And so because the one that the ballpark they were playing at before burned down,
yeah,
so the owner was like, you know what, I don't want this one to burn down. Let's make it everything they can't burn, right? So they built it out of brick. So it was the first one that was actually like that. Nothing built for another 15 years until 1909 was made out of brick or steel, uh-huh. right? In the meantime, in the early 1900s, they kind of perfected steel reinforced concrete. Uh-huh. If you look at like go Google images of the Packard plant in Detroit, it was built in like 1905. Uh-huh. It's been abandoned for 50 years, and it's still it's still solid. Yeah. As a rock, you know. I snuck up in there actually when I was in Detroit around that building, but you know, so 1909 the A's decided to they basically revolutionized baseball the way Camden Yards revolutionized the last generation, right? They built Shibe Park.
Mm-hmm. That was in 1909, right?
Yeah, 1909. Yeah, it was the first brick, steel reinforced concrete, and stadium ever built.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's just a beautiful structure. It's built like an actual cathedral. And when it opened, I mean, there wasn't a ballpark in baseball that could even compare to it, right? Wow. And the same. And the same thing happened when Camden Yards were open. Like, as soon as Camden Yards were open, they're like, whoa, I want one of those, right? Yep. Every owner said to themselves, right? So same thing for in 1909, when Shibe Park was built and Forbes Field came in slightly after, everybody was like, well, this is the way to go. And between 1909 and 1915, I mean, pretty much every team got a new ballpark.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yankee Stadium was built in 1923. And I mean, by then every team had already had it.
So do you know much about, I was looking on Wikipedia, they actually played at a stadium before Shibe Park. It was called Columbia Park. Do you know anything about that? It was from 1901 to 08. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was just like any ballpark at the time. It was, you know, it was just made of wood and it's very small capacity. And even though the A's, you know, came out of the gate, you know, early, they were good. You know, the whole white elephant story.
Yeah.
He started and got all the good players and they were the white elephant in the room. But yeah, so the A's, you know, is first, you know, 1901 to 1908, they were really good. But you know, obviously outgrew their ballpark. And just like any stadium built in that era is not very memorable.
Well, I think it's funny that the A's, like, they have this reputation of being a cheap franchise, but I guess they had that back in the day too, right? Like, I saw they might have even thrown the 1914 World Series because Connie Mack was so frugal or something like that. So, it's like different times, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
We're now with the, I guess we can
talk about where the A's went next, right? To Kansas City.
Yeah, 1954, 55, after 54 season, they moved to Kansas City, which is ironic because had it been any other year except for maybe, if it had been before 1950, guarantee it would have been the Phillies that would have left.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Interesting.
So the Phillies were, you know, they were the minor league team in Philadelphia for 40 years, except for maybe there was a stretch in 1914, 15 that they were pretty good. But other than that, they were horrible. Couldn't draw any people, played at the Baker Bowl.
Played in the shadow of the A's. The A's had a bigger.
They were the Boston Braves to the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. You know, so, and had, the whole movement thing west happened in the 40s or 30s or even up to 1950, it would have been the Philadelphia Phillies that I guarantee you would have been the ones that left because they were the unpopular club. But you know how Connie Mack was, it was all in or nothing, right? Yeah. And yep. They were in their nothing stage. And the Phillies were drawn, and Phillies were getting good at that time, were drawn more than the A's, and the A's decided to bolt.
Yeah.
Chose Kansas City of all places.
And they actually drew fans there, right? I saw they drew like 1.5 million fans in the mid 50s or something, which is probably more than they draw now.
yeah, like the first year. Yeah. they drew a lot of fans at first because it was a novelty.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. But you know, I don't know how much of the Kansas City A's history you know, but they were kind of known as the Yankees minor league team.
Yeah.
Triple A team.
What was their stadium there?
Yeah. Kansas City Municipal.
Uh-huh.
Which that was in their bracket, had a lot too, of history right?
to it. The Kansas City Monarchs played there.
Yeah.
And the Royals actually used it in their first couple seasons too. So before Kauffman or the Royal Stadium.
Is it still there? Is it still standing or no?
It's not there. There's a nice little monument to it, but no.
Was it downtown?
No, it's more neighborly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, they're trying to get a downtown park now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's the way the future
is. The fountains are so classic though, man. They better keep the fountains.
Yeah, but it's kind of like it's far from downtown, right?
Yeah, it's just off the freeway. Yeah. It's a suburban ballpark. Yeah,
So the next wave of stadiums was the convertible, you know, the football and baseball stadiums, and the A's are still. I think they're the only ones left stadium, right? Yeah. How many of things? It used to be a time where almost every team played in a convertible stadium like that.
I actually tweeted out a couple years ago when the Raiders left.
Yep.
I knew, you know, popped in my head and I knew this was it. This was end of an era. The last time you would see a
infield dirt.
Infield dirt on a football field or hash marks on a baseball field, you know? Yeah. So I remember that date. I mean, that was definitely an end of an era. I mean, you had 1912 to 1915, you had this big building boom. Yankee Stadium came along in 23. Cleveland Municipal came along in 32. Until then, you didn't, you know, those ballparks, most of those lasted 50 years. You know, Crosley lasted until 1970. Forbes lasted until 1970. Shibe Park lasted until 1970. You know, Comiskey Park lasted all the way to 90.
I went to the last night game at Comiskey Park.
Did you?
I was 3 years old, but I remember leaving on my dad's shoulders And I remember the white, the, you know, all the bricks, they had whitewashed them all white. They didn't want to like replace any of the masonry. So instead they were just cake on, you know, you get like an old apartment and you can see, you can like barely see the old sconces and stuff. Cause it's, you know, it's under so many, you know, things of white paint. That was old Comiskey Park. And I remember the green seas that were painted on the outside of the stadium. So that's what I remember. As a three-year-old, I remember leaving on my dad's shoulders and people being really sad that that was like the last night game. I think there was one more game the next day, but.
Right. It's against the Mariners, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. At least you can say you were there. I was old enough to have been, to done it, have done it if I've gone, you know, during my high school days, but, you know. Didn't get to make it before 1990.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I remember watching games on TV at that place. And I just feel
I'm still kind of bummed that I never went to the original Yankee Stadium. Like I definitely could have. Like I remember going on a family vacation in New York and like I should have asked my parents because I would love to have seen the place where Babe Ruth played. You know, that would have been amazing.
Right. Now,
sort of.
It's sort of the place that, yeah, unfortunately, it's my opinion and
yeah,
but most New Yorkers agree with me that the 74 to 75 renovation ruined place. It wasn't the same.
Gutted it, right? They gutted it and
they lowered the field 6 feet. They took out all the support columns and they added, so in order to do that, they added like 12 rows to the upper deck to counterweight. Yeah. So that got rid of the freeze, the signature freeze of the ballpark and the roof. And,
I went to old Yankee Stadium and it definitely didn't feel like Wrigley Field, you know, it definitely didn't feel like Fenway. It felt more like New Comiskey.
Yeah, exactly. Cause they had those hideous round ramps.
Yeah.
Out in the outfield. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah, no, I didn't, unfortunately wasn't old enough to make it to the original Yankee Stadium. But yeah, I made it to the renovated version, and that's the exact same feeling I got, was U.S. Cellular Guaranteed Rate feel. You know, so
exactly. Okay,
yeah. So I didn't really miss, like, because
you can go. Yeah, go to the south side of Chicago. That's basically.
No, yeah, I've been to Fenway and Wrigley, and it feels like this sport feels different. Like I can't explain it, but it's so intimate. It's like, oh, this is like how baseball, because now it's so big and grandiose. But like when you're in those tiny ballparks, it's just like, I don't know. It just feels like a different sport, man. It's so fun. Like I really love it there. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a different place. It's a different place to vend Wrigley Field. So, you know,
let's talk about that.
I've not been to Wrigley Field in probably 8 or 9 years, and they've done a lot of renovations of it. They were always sort of doing renovations of it and stuff. But, you know, I mean, I remember when I was vending, they still didn't have a Jumbotron. Let's just say that, right? Like I've seen on TV that they have a Jumbotron now, and it's just like, oh, really? Really? I mean, okay. But like also, really? Yeah. but it was just a different place to vend. So like one of the main things, and one of the things that I think they did with their renovations is, you know, this is back, again, this wasn't like ancient history. This was the aughts, you know, this is 2005 to 2010. They had so few places for concessions that people, you know, really bought a lot more from seat vendors. So we would have, you know, in a normal stadium, I think you have, you know, you might like for a big night, you might have like, you know, 80 beer vendors, you know, and then maybe like 15 food guys or something. But every Cubs game, there's like 250 vendors, right? And like half of them were on food, because not only was there just like not a lot of places for concessions. So like most people, you get a hot dog at Wrigley Field, you were getting it from a hot dog vendor. But also there's a ton of, especially behind the support columns. So, you know, there's the big sections, a huge amount of the lower deck sections are underneath the overhang of the upper deck at Wrigley. Mm-hmm. And those sections are just so massive. And there might be 45 or 50 seats, you know, in between two rows there. You know, right. you want to get up and go get food, you got to ask 25 people to stand up. So you're just like, fuck it. We'll just get the peanut guy.
Yeah. Right.
Get the peanut guy. Yeah. And, you know, there's so little space there. We had to get our assignment. We had to like organize ourselves with the union and get our assignment in a warehouse across the street. So you'd only enter the stadium once you had your assignment. And I mean, some of those commissaries were just tiny, tiny little spaces that they'd like carved out of nothing to be like, all right, here, we put a fridge in here. And you can, you know, and you were basically, you were waiting to, you were like waiting to get your food basically in the area where all the other fans were walking around. It was like that. And I think that that's similar to Fenway. You know, there's the most vendors, I think, are at Wrigley Field and Fenway Park, because there's just less room for all the.
Right. Having huge open concourses wasn't a thing back in 1912. Exactly. And you know, going back to ballparks back in, you know, 1910, 1912, they were built within the confines of a city block.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's it. And each city block's shaped different. And that's why you had all these different quirks and shapes of stadiums. Like the Baker Bowl was 280 down the line. Fenway Park, you know, you had to have the Green Monster because
Polo Grounds is like 500 feet.
On the other side of the fence is the street. Right.
Yep.
So, you know, Crosley Field was built 10 feet down on one side of the, you know, it was kind of on a hill. So in order to hold the fence up, they had to have a sloping, the field sloped to hold the fence up. So you got all these little quirks. And yeah, you didn't have enough room to have anything in there.
All right. So tell us about why, you know, the Oakland Coliseum. It's in your worst. What is this? The worst baseball worst of all MLB's time bracket.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's crazy. It's I think as of this year, it's their longest. Now this is year 55. This is their longest. It's overtaken Shy Park as their longest.
Or
I guess it already overtook Shy Park a few years ago. But they've been here the longest.
I marked that moment too. They've been in the Coliseum longer than they've been anywhere.
Yeah.
So crazy. There's a bunch of old retired stadiums, some that don't exist anymore in the in your bracket, but there's a couple that are still extant, like the Coliseum. What other stadiums are in there that still are hosting games?
Okay, so this is what I did. You know, to take the 32 worst team, that ballpark. So I was just trying to make a bracket, like an even bracket that fits right. You know, I didn't want any. I didn't want any buys.
Playing games, you know,
right. Yeah. So it's either going to be 16, 32, or 64, right? Well, okay. So I said there's really 20 something or low 20s that are, okay. This is a horrible ballpark. A horrible stadium, easy to put in there. But then, you know, I needed to find to fill out the rest of the bracket, five or six, seven, eight more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then I did put some reasonable criteria on it. I didn't want any, you know, Colt Stadium where the Astros played for a couple of years was hideous. Mm-hmm. Six Stadium where the Pilots played was atrocious.
Six Stadium.
I didn't want to include the LA Coliseum was a horrible place for baseball where the Dodgers played before Dodger Stadium. So I didn't want, you know, I excluded any ballpark that wasn't used for at least five seasons.
Okay.
Right. You know, to get rid of the minor league parks. Now, Jerry Park, where the Expos played for 8 years, is in there. But so I took the obvious ones that are bad. Exhibition Stadium, the Kingdome, Metrodome, all the way up. And that included pretty much any, and I didn't really include any of the classic ballparks, right? I could have put the Polo Grounds in there because it was such a weird, horrible place for baseball, but it's so weird and horrible that it's awesome, right? So I didn't include any of the classic parks. So, you know, if you go back to the beginning of the new era was Memorial Stadium in Baltimore. And then the modern stadiums. And then we were talking about earlier, then it went to the multi-purpose stadium. So obviously all those were included, like Three Rivers, Riverfront, Busch Stadium, Veterans Stadium, RFK, Even Shea Stadium is really a cookie cutter. It just has a Pac-Man cut out to it.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So I included all those. And then once I got the Indian County Stadiums in there and all that, but I had to pick, you know, a few ballparks that are still existing. And this is where I got the most kickback feedback from every, or, you know, crap from everybody. And in the feedback is, you know, they're going to get, people are going to get butt hurt about their favorite stadium. You know, anything. Okay. So let's just take the top five, the worst five ballparks in baseball right now. Right. So let's start with that to fill in the bracket. So, okay.
Yep.
Obviously,
The last time, bro.
Yeah.
What's that? Yeah. Tropicana. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Rogers Center is outdated and it's not really a ballpark, even though they've done some renovations. Even though Guaranteed Rate Field is 1,000 times better than it was when it opened in 1991.
Yep. I can attest to that. It's still not good. It's in a bad place.
It didn't feel personal. I don't know. I've been there too. It just kind of felt like, right. I don't know.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. I mean, it used to be in a, I mean, it's, it used to be in a neighborhood in Bridgeport, right? That used to be a neighborhood.
But there's a freeway.
Then they built, I mean, yeah, Old Comiskey Park, they built the freeway. It's a 9-lane freeway. It has like an L tracks going through the middle. They built a freeway, tore that down. And then it's surrounded by a freeway on one side. And then on two other sides, it's surrounded by just huge seas of parking. And then on the third side, it's surrounded by an old folks home, like a low income old folks home. And, you know, and obviously like the South Side of Chicago is the lower, you know, is like, you know, is the much more like economically depressed area, you know, so there's just like nothing. There's like one hot dog stand there that is sort of there. There's like one really old bar that's like, again, on the other side of huge parking lots. It's just, it's not in a good neighborhood. You know, I don't know if this story is true. I would love to hear if you've heard this. So the story that I heard is that, so the Bridgeport, the neighborhood that New Comiskey Park is, whatever it's called, it's New Comiskey Park to me, but New Comiskey Park is in, is called Bridgeport. And that used to be, it really used to be this like big Irish neighborhood. And it was part of where the Dailies, who were the, you know, Richard, the two Richard Dailies, who were mayors. One was mayor, you know, in the 60s. And then the other was mayor in the 90s and aughts. You know, that's where their old political power was from. And so when, you know, the bean, that sculpture in Chicago.
Yeah.
So that's in this new park right downtown called Millennium Park, which used to be a train yard. And so when they were in the 1990 or 1989, when they were trying to figure out where they're going to put the new Sox stadium, they said, well, this train yard is, we could put the stadium right downtown here. And the mayor Daley was like, no. The Comiskey Park's the only thing holding together my old Irish neighborhood. It's going down there. And so there was, for a while, there was talk of the White Sox Park being right in Grant Park, right downtown, with all the big buildings there where the bean sculpture is. But nope, it's in a terrible place.
And not only that, they didn't even face it towards downtown this time.
Right.
Right. Yep. Comiskey Park was, I mean, it was all closed in. They had the big massive scoreboard in the center, so you really couldn't see.
It didn't matter anyway, but yeah.
But the new one, it's facing the other direction.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So those four, everyone I can agree with. Those are terrible.
And then, stadiums. Of course, the Oakland.
Of course. Yeah. That's a given. Yeah.
It's a point of pride.
I still had to add a couple more to that, right? So there's the thing is, and people understand, is all the new stadiums built since Camden Yards. Pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, your PNC Park, and you got your Oracle, and you got your, you know, Camden Yards, and all these other ones that, you know, stand out as being the top of that. But even your newer ones, like the one in Atlanta, Truist, whatever you want, is a great ballpark. Target Field is a great ballpark.
Yeah, I was gonna say Target Field looks like it's really cool. Cool spot. Yeah.
But, you know, so some of there's going to be a new couple new ones that were built that aren't as great. And the one that sticks out to me is Nationals Park.
I saw that.
Right. Yeah. So I was running out of slots. I got to put something there.
You had to put somebody in there.
Down the list of the worst current ballparks. Right. I got Guaranteed Rate. I got Oakland. I got Tampa. I got Rogers. I got Chase Field, the KSA Dome. Got to put that in there. So now I got to get to some actually decent ballparks. So yeah. I'm sorry, the Nationals.
People got mad. Yeah. I worked for a bunch of years at Nats Park. I'll say this. It's like a super great neighborhood. It's near the metro. And they've built up a bunch of new bars and a bunch of new apartments all around there. But inside, it feels like any new park, you know? There's nothing that's like, oh, that's the thing about Nationals Park. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
The thing that I don't like about Nationals Park is it's kind of sterile. It's very split level upper deck. Yes. Everything's really far away.
Yes.
They could have used the neighbor instead of putting a parking garage right out in left field. They could have done something else there.
You can see the Capitol from the upper deck, but you can't see the Capitol from the lower deck. What you can see are both large parking lots.
right. I mean, you would think you would have done something about that. So
I agree.
I could have included. I mean, people argue about what are the rankings of the current stadiums, you know? So I'm not going to, I'll just throw Globe Life Park in there. People hated
it. All right. So baseball's last dive bar, the Oakland Coliseum, has moved on to the, Sweet 16 here.
Actually, I'm going to retitle it on the next graphic as the unsweet.
Oh, the sour 16
and the delete 8.
Oh, I like it.
It's up against Pro Player Stadium, which might hold the record for most names within its life.
Yeah. Oh no. I tweeted that out one time, they expanded that. There's no way I could have done the original 240 characters. So that,
Coliseum's had a few names. The
Odeco. I had to write it on the little notepad, right? You know, Oakland, yeah. Molly Ringwald Stadium now.
Ring Central. Ring Central for three years.
I'll call it Oakland Coliseum.
It's been Ring Central, I think, for 3 years now. I've never heard anyone call it Ring Central. And still, rather than, you know, like, I remember when the Giants changed their name from, what was it, AT&T to Oracle, right? Like, there's giant, huge, there used to be giant, huge, you know, 12-foot tall, physical AT&T stadium, you know, out front. And they popped those suckers on, put brand new, giant, 12-foot Oracle Field. There's still just like a plastic tarp on front. It's like you open up a new business. They still have not paid to even have like a real physical sign. It's still just something strapped down with ropes.
Yeah.
Because they know it's going to change next year, right?
Yeah. So. I mean, who cares, right? Like, I think they probably call Ring Central every February 1st and be like, hey, you got like 30 grand or something?
Well, Mark, I was reading like Charlie O'Finley, when he bought the team in Kansas City, he actually was considering moving it to Seattle. Do you know how close he was to having the A's up in Seattle? Do you know if that was like a real thing or is that just a threat or like?
It's the same thing as everybody else. You're threatened to go to Vegas, threatened to go to here, Seattle was looking for a team. He preferred to go to Oakland, but let's go back to the bracket real quick.
And
be realistic. Okay, so the next round is going to be Pro Player Stadium, or name it, Joe Robbie, where the Marlins played before they are now, and Oakland Coliseum, right? Realistically, okay, so people have recency bias.
Yes. So
I am 100% guarantee you that the vote will end up being Oakland's going to win it. yeah, or losing, whatever. They're yeah. going to advance yeah. the next round. I guarantee yep. it. But if you really think about it, Oakland's 10 times better place to watch a baseball game than a football stadium where the Dolphins, you know, built for the Dolphins.
Right? Yeah, it was originally built only as a football stadium.
Right, right. And yeah. and if you go back, people, you know, Oakland, I think, you know, the Oakland Coliseum was once before Mount Davis, it was a good place to watch a game.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's still, don't remember that. It's like, I think Oakland Coliseum's curse was that it wasn't bad enough. Yeah. Right? Like all these old like cookie cutter stadiums are just so bad. But the Coliseum is just like, this is not bad enough. And you know, so there wasn't that, you know, they weren't like running around like their hair was on fire in the 90s to be like, we need a new stadium. This is right. impossible to continue.
Yeah, that's a great point, because like if you think of all the multi-purpose stadiums, Three River Stadium, Riverfront, Atlanta, Fulton County, Veterans Stadium, even RFK would consider that. It was Oakland Coliseum technically was a multi-purpose stadium because the Raiders played there.
Yep.
You know, Jack Murphy Stadium or Qualcomm, whatever they call it. It was the best out of all of those.
Yeah.
For baseball.
Yep.
Right. So, I mean, yep. that's and it's going to advance further. I guarantee it than any of those cookie cutters in this tournament.
Yeah, you're right. Because people know it and people. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the last few years, the reputation of, you know, the whole it's like the Baker Bowl. When the Baker Bowl, you know, was built yeah. in 1895, it was the most advanced stadium in baseball. But by 1938, when they moved in with the A's at Shibe Park, it was a piece of crap, falling apart.
Yeah, the feral cats and the possums don't help, you know. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I had, fans of my Twitter feed will know that there was a very small kitten that a bunch of people had seen under the third base dugout that was living there for about two homestands. And I at one point was able to feed her half a hot dog in the middle of a game. Unfortunately, the next day, like I brought like a cage. I was like, let's try and catch her. And then fortunately, I think the next away game, the Oakland pound came and found her and caught her. And so somebody adopted her. But yeah, I've also seen a lot of adult feral cats, especially if you hang out long enough after the game like I do, you know, they'll be out in the outfield in the bleachers nibbling on the food that's left.
Better than 10,000 seagulls.
That's true. Mark, have you seen the renderings of the proposed stadium for Howard Terminal?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Where do you think that would fit in?
And as far as rankings are concerned,
if they built that Howard Terminal Stadium, what do you think of it? Where do you think that would fit in amongst other stadiums and stuff? And you can be honest.
The owner of the A's,
John Fisher.
I'm spacing on his name. The architect. He's a star architect. The guy who designed the Howard Terminal, Markle something. He's a big deal. The guy that designed the Howard Terminal.
Ingalls? Is it Ingalls or something like that?
But he's a star, is what they call a star architect. I hate that word, but he's mm-hmm. a star architect, right? He designs mm-hmm. all these modern buildings. They're all over Europe and they're cool. Their signature is like they're glass with the patios that you have ferns and grass growing on and all that kind of thing, right? So it's to each his own as far as architecture style is concerned. So Fisher liked this guy and he hired him to design the stadium. So it's definitely different.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It would not be like any other ballpark in baseball, which gives us uniqueness, which I'm definitely give bonus points to.
Mm-hmm.
How difference do you see? Like what makes it unique? Like what
you've seen the drawing. I wish you could put one up right now. How the how the ramp goes, the park goes all the way up from the ground,
like the
all
rooftop
the way up
park.
Around
the rooftop park.
Top, and it's supposed to be like a park that's open all year round. I don't know how they're going to kick people out of there.
But
that's all unique. And it looked like at one point, the original drawings looked like almost like the land of the Lord of the Rings, where the little people live in the hills.
it's kind of built into the hill. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, like a bunch of little, you go in there and go to like some bar. It's definitely unique. I would rank it, I think that, and you gotta love that the fact that they're integrating the whole crane down there.
Yeah,
Howard
Stern. Yeah,
that'd be really cool too. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I thought they could. Now, I understand they didn't want it to be Oracle/AT&T, whatever park you want to call it.
Yep.
They didn't want to mirror it. As far as, being this, splash home run hits and things like that. But I mean, let's be realistic. If you look at your ballpark rankings, where would you rank Great American Ballpark compared to AT&T/Oracle Park and PNC Park in Pittsburgh?
Much lower.
I feel like Oracle and PNC are like the standards, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Cincinnati, the Great American Ballpark's right on the river too. Right?
To be fair, but it's also on the other side. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. It's right on the river, but also the river in Cincinnati is just dominated by that freeway that they built there. So, it's right on the river. It's also right on the freeway. It feels like an even more big if now than it has in a while. If they do build a Howard Terminal, they'll build the stadium first. And, all these new renderings show it surrounded by all the new buildings and all the new housing and stuff. And that stuff won't get built for a while, sort of like how the stuff that they built at the Giants didn't get built. And so originally it will be right on the waterfront, but surrounded by train tracks and a bunch of empty parking lots. And I think that you're right. It will have a similar kind of thing to the Great American Ballpark. But I think if they build out that neighborhood that they want to build out there too. And, what's nice is it's only 3 blocks from all these restaurants and stuff that are also on the waterfront at Jack London Square.
Love that place.
I think that's the hope, is that it'll be kind of like, feel like that. Cause I mean, that the pinnacle of ballparks in my mind, it's just cause I was a kid in Chicago, is Wrigley Field, where it's in a neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's in a neighborhood. What would be so much fun to me as a kid was you'd be walking around, as a little kid, I didn't know where I was, I didn't know what street, or whatever. So I'd just be walking downtown amongst all these brownstones, and you turn one corner and it would look like all the other blocks. But all of a sudden at the end of the block, you could see the back of the scoreboard. It said, "Welcome to Wrigley Field." And you're like, "Oh my God, it just like appeared in the middle of nowhere," And so I really hope is that if they build it, they can build that neighborhood around it. And it just becomes part of that neighborhood in a way that is closer to, I think, what they have at in Boston and in San Francisco and these other places.
Yeah. But, I mean, you'd love to have, your housing and maybe some office space, but everything on the ground level is all shopping or restaurants and bars and things like that. And then floor two.
How the hot dog guy pub right outside, right up front.
Right. So back to the Howard Terminal. I like it. I would have, it's got some great things going for it. The view would be tremendous. You got part of the Oakland Hills, you got downtown there. You can catch some of a lot of the seats can catch the bay, but the only minor thing I would do, maybe it would have to be a 490 foot shot, is just have the possibility of landing in the bay maybe once every 5 years. right? It doesn't have to be 90 splash hits a year. Doesn't even have to be five. Just once every 5 years. If there's somebody who could have the possibility to poke one.
Mark, they'd have to write that into the EIR. They'd have to write that into the environmental impact report. Oh,
yeah, I know. That would delay
another 2 year delay. Right? That one once every 5 year splash hit.
Right.
We'd have to get more investigations.
Well, there's
a part of the environmental impact report. There was somebody said that peregrine falcons nest in these old cranes now that are disused. And they're like, what happens if a ball hits a peregrine falcon? And the EIR report was like, this would have to be an 850 home run that was still 100 feet off the ground. We found minimal impacts to peregrine falcons.
Like somebody actually took thought to it and responded.
Yeah, they had to write that. Right. They had to write that. Yeah.
Mark, I got a random question for you. We were talking about like Fenway and Wrigley. Was there ever a time where people wanted to demolish those stadiums? Like now people are like, oh, they're beloved. Everybody loves them. But
oh, yeah.
I'm sure there was like a point where everybody's like, this place sucks. We got to get rid of it, right? Like, but they kept it, right? Yeah.
More than once for Fenway. You know, in the early 80s, they wanted to build a multi-purpose stadium for the Patriots and the Red Sox.
Yep.
And then early, even like as late as the 1990s, early 2000s, they had a whole Fenway Park 2, which if you ever see the renderings of, it's atrocious. The center, they made it look like Fenway Park, uh-huh. right? But it would be a modern version of Fenway Park. And so, but they still tried to do the way the center field, the seats in the right field kind of line up. And it would have been like 800 feet away from the top seat in center field. Google that sometime, or just type in MLB Cathedrals and Fenway Park concept. And you'll see it since
what stadium that they tore down, like what stadium do you think had they not torn it down and they just had updated it would have been the best sort of like what was the biggest mistake?
Like, say, save Shad Park or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. That's a great question, right? Because, you know, people can go back in time. Usually the first answer is they would want to go back to Ebbets Field, right? Ebbets Field, no matter what, wasn't salvageable. It only sat like 32,000 people. There was no room for it to expand anywhere. And the neighborhood deteriorated quickly after. It was already deteriorating when the doctors left.
Yep.
So that one wasn't salvageable. Shibe Park, same thing. Only sat like 32,000 people. It's in North Philly. By the early 70s, the neighborhood had deteriorated. Or actually 60s and 50s, and there wasn't really room to expand. Unfortunately, you couldn't have saved it. I would have loved, now if I could go back in time and talk to convince city council or whoever, I would have loved to have them save the shell, like the rotundas, the outside brick, converted it, made it into apartments or something.
But
kept the exterior. Same with all the other the classic ballparks. Crosley was small, didn't have really room to grow. The Sportsman's Park in St. Louis, same thing. And
what about Tiger Stadium?
Now that's where we're getting to.
Okay. So
the two that lasted the longest that were actually salvageable.
Yeah.
Were Comiskey Park.
Yep.
And Tiger Stadium.
Yeah.
Now Bill Vett. Okay. If you remember Bill Veeck, owner of
I like Bill Veeck.
He's the best, like, right?
20, he owned the 20 other teams at one point.
Yep.
He was the last owner that made his money from baseball.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Everybody else now and up and even back in their 80s, they were the like Ray Kroc owned McDonald's. Made his money from McDonald's. So every owner of baseball has made their money from something else. Baseball is just their toy. Right. Well, Veeck was different. He didn't have an outside business. That was his income, his only income. So, and you know, he didn't really make that much money. So everything that he had had to come to, for renovations and things like that, had to come out of his pocket. Mm-hmm. Yeah, any investment. So unfortunately, when Vec owned the White Sox, he let Comiskey Park go.
Yeah.
And so by 1990, it really wasn't salvageable.
Yeah.
Had they had the foresight in the early 80s to, like, let's save this ballpark, yeah, it could be around. Now, Tiger Stadium, on the other hand, they did it's called the Cochran Plan.
Uh-huh.
They want, I forgot the name of the owner of the Detroit Tigers. It starts with I.
Illich, I think.
Yeah. He was the one that insisted he wanted a brand new place right downtown.
Yep.
So he was the one that wanted to leave Tiger Stadium. Now, there was a group of people who was like, basically, save Fenway, save Ferris, save Tiger Stadium. They did a whole study called the Cochran Plan and came up with a, really good models of what it would look like and how it worked. They did this when they did the study, they found out that it was so overbuilt, in fact, that they could have removed half of the support columns.
Oh, wow.
Not a lot of earthquakes in Detroit, too.
And it was still been up to code and able to hold up the upper deck. So yeah. What the plan called for and is, and what I loved about Tiger Stadium is the upper deck was so close to the field and on top of the field that even the very last row of the upper deck was about the same, I mean, a little higher, but not much higher than where the first row is now, where the suites are. Mm-hmm. So you could have put the suites right on the roof.
Yep.
You know, if you look at Tiger Stadium, it's kind of got this weird wooden press box that surrounds half the stadium. They would have just put all the suites right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could have done what they're doing now with all the little social spaces. You could have knocked out some seats in the outfield. Yep. And
I saw they preserved the field, though. I saw the field is actually still there, right? Like,
it was kept, you know, they knocked it down. The last game was played in 99. I believe they knocked it down like 2008, 2009, right after the Super Bowl that they had there. But they left the field, and it was just the grass field for a long time. There was this volunteer group called the Navin Field Grounds Crew that would go out and they'd mow it. And people would stop by there before a game at the new place, Comerica Park. And, you know, play catch, and the flagpole was still there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the same color because they used it. I believe it was the movie 61 with, God, I forgot the name of the actor. He was
it's the one about Roger Maris, right? Or
yeah, it was about Roger Maris, about 61. Yep. I think it was Billy Crystal was the
director. Yeah, it was Billy Crystal, yeah.
They used to use Tiger Stadium as to sub for Yankee Stadium. So they painted everything that light blue.
Yep.
So that the flagpole still has that light blue on it from the movie. And then it has the blue from the Tiger Stadium. Then it has the green from Tiger Stadium. If you go look at the flagpole, it's like 10 different colors. 10, you can see each layer of paint that they put on. But it's still there. So yeah, the last time I was there was still grass. There's still, they hadn't built the what's there now. And it's, I believe it's a police, help me out here, Alex. A PAC, something, it's a community center. But they kept the field. It's artificial turf now.
Yeah, because I was looking about doing a road trip there, and I was seeing my Airbnb would be actually kind of close by their old ballpark in Corktown, that neighborhood, Corktown right there. And it looks like there's a bunch of breweries and stuff. But it's,
yeah, that's cool. There's I found a little, when I went there last time, cool little barbecue joint, just maybe half a block away from where.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, yeah. Yeah, so.
So, yeah, Mark, we've had you on for a while. I kind of want to wrap things up here. And,
sure.
Vegas. I mean, that's a big thing about A's fans. Do you think, whether it's the A's or another franchise, do you think MLB is destined to have a stadium in Vegas on the Strip at some point? And what do you think? What do you think Vegas is a viable market for baseball? You know.
Well, I mean, Vegas has surprised me, right? Because, you know, the hockey team was the first to move into there. I mean, growing up, Vegas wasn't any different than like Albuquerque.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Right. As far as the size is concerned, but it's such a unique market because you have so many people from in and out of town that you just have a whole city's worth of people coming in every weekend to get the Vegas experience, that you have a whole different market there to sell to. And you have all these, you know, casinos that could buy tickets for giveaways and to their guests and things like that. So I think it's a viable market.
Yeah.
If not now, in the next few years. I mean, obviously you've got the Raiders there now.
Yeah.
They've been successful. They sell out every game.
Yeah. And then Bryce Harper, I thought he had an interesting point. He's like, you know, I think they would benefit from an expansion franchise, not like bringing in the A's. Like, people in Vegas love the Golden Knights because it's their franchise, you know, and nobody else.
Right. So, well, I hate, every time that I see a lot, like, just move the Rays already because they suck. The Tropicana sucks and Tampa sucks and they can't support mm-hmm. them. Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And my answer is, you know, I lost my Sonics. I was a Sonics fan. Right.
Yep.
And anybody who's ever been, I haven't watched the NBA. I have not watched the NBA since. Yep. I haven't bought in Starbucks since because Howard Schultz is the guy that sold it to the guy.
Yep.
Right. And he's the owner. He's the guy from Starbucks. So I understand the pain of losing a franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, I can, you know, I'm sure you guys are probably Raider fans. You know what that's like.
I don't know about how, but I am.
Right. And I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Yeah.
So I don't want the A's to leave. You know, I don't want them to go to Vegas. I'd rather have Vegas. Yeah, they'd be better off having their own expansion team. I would love to see expansion. 15 team AL and NL doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I think 32, I mean, it just seems like it's kind of heading that way. And it's like, I almost think, like, I forget who suggested, but someone is like, it's almost like the MLB is letting the A's do the dirty work and do all the research and, like, figure out the best place for a side. And even if it doesn't work out for them, it's like, whoever takes over next can just take all that information from the A's and apply it to their search or whatever. So it's almost like MLB is using the A's as a guinea pig or something like that.
But it's always been like that. You always have that one that's trying to, you know, it's all about leverage.
Yep.
That's it for me. Hal, you got anything else, man?
Mark, thank you so much for talking to us about stadiums. This was great.
Everybody make sure to follow at MLB Cathedral. Get your votes in. Let's get that Coliseum to the final, baby.
Yes. Screw Joe Roby, Landshark, Hard Rock, pro player, Miami Gardens Community Redevelopment Corporation Field. Screw it. It's all about the O.co stadium, baby.
Ring Central.
It's Ricky Henderson Field at the Ring Central Oakland Coliseum.
Yeah.